Hello, everyone. I'm Stuart Gandalf. Welcome to What Makes a Healthcare Website Great and How to Get One. I'm looking forward to working with you this morning on this, in California, at least, blustery day. Today, we're going to talk about this is a topic that I thought would be fun because there's a lot of attendees who have probably gone through website builds. Some have not been involved with very large ones, some have been rather small. But there's a lot of questions that remain about websites and how to do this right and how to choose a good website, what really matters, what can you do on the front end to prepare for the back end, and to do this really thoughtfully. And websites are very important, as we will soon discuss. And so this is just based upon best practices, working with hundreds of websites over the years as we create them for our clients, questions that come up a lot we tried to answer today. So I hope you'll really enjoy and find this session useful. So we're going to start off by talking of some quick introductions. We're going to start off by talking about the what makes a website great, how to create great website, how to project initiation, planning, the site architecture, the content plan, design, development, and launch. And so without further ado, let's get into it. Okay. Oops, that was my slide. There we go. Okay. I'm Stuart Gandalf. I'm CEO of Healthcare Success. I've been doing this for a while now. I started this company in, about 18 years ago. And before that, I worked in the business in healthcare. Do a lot of writing, speaking, and talking on this topic, but I'm heavily involved with the creative on most of our clients' projects. So I'll be providing some tips about the how this all works. And I'm esteemed colleague here, Brett, will be joining me. Brett is Creative Director of Design. Brett has done some fantastic work with us and for our clients. So when we get to the design part, he'll be attending or presenting rather. So Brett, welcome this morning.
Likewise, and hi, everybody.
So just as a reminder, we are a healthcare marketing agency. So everything from our point of view is delivered around creating things that actually generate results. So whether it's a B2B site or a B2C site, we're really focused on, what is the purpose? How can we drive results, whatever those results might be? We're a leading agency in this space. And as I mentioned a moment ago, we do a lot of these. So let's start off by talking about what makes a website great. The first thing is to keep in mind that your website is truly your digital front door. It used to be your front door was your front door, but now today, your physical front door, although many of you have a lot of front doors, right? If you have multiple locations. But the first experience of most patients or clients or consumers is your website. So often that even if they're just looking up your address, when they've been referred to you, if they found you online, if they're checking you out and they're deciding to use you from their insurance plan, the website is the first impression. So clearly we want to do a good job there. That's really important. But if that wasn't enough, typically if you're doing marketing, it's the center of everything. You really can't do much online without having a good website. So yeah, there might be landing pages once in a while or so forth, but really for most campaigns, it's the epicenter of our marketing. So I would urge you to think about your website to require or to be deserve the investment because, if that's a weak link in your marketing chain, everything else just sort of falls apart, which would make sense to you. So the first thing is then, what are our objectives for website? Why are we doing this at all? What are what is the point of doing a website from your point of view? Let's get started here. First of all, we want to make sure that your website, or when you're doing a website, you're thinking about appealing to all of your target audiences. So that could include your customers, job candidates, people are typically looking to recruit these days, investors, donors, analysts, and especially Google. So right from the start, you have typically multiple objectives and multiple target audiences for your website. The second thing is to generate typically inquiries or direct sales. Most of the time, most of the clients we work with are trying to get some action from users, whether it's generate an inquiry, book an appointment, sell something. There's a reason why we want to have that website be successful. Third thing is to, again, as the center point of your marketing, to enhance, reflect, amplify your brand. It's a really critical part of your brand. Most of our clients take branding very seriously. They recognize that the business that they're in is larger than the sum of its parts. What is our image? What is our brand message? How do we reflect that? And again, if your website's off touch, when it's the epicenter of everything, kind of a problem, right? Educate the public. It's funny, when websites first came out, everybody wanted to educate the public. We still do with blogs and for search engine optimization. We recognize that our job isn't solely to educate the public, and other sites do that quite well, for example, Mayo Clinic, but we still want to educate the public, particularly on our own area of expertise. If you're a nonprofit soliciting donations, if you're looking to recruit new employees, as so many of our clients are these days, and then also providing easy place for people to find their patient portal or employee intranets, those kinds of things. So think about this as we're going through this. I urge you to take some notes and think about which of these apply and what other things might apply to your business. Oh, one more thing. I jumped straight into this. We are recording the session today, and we'll be sending the recording. I'll also send some helpful links with the recording. You can ask questions in the Q&A. So if you have questions, please feel free to include those. And again, I recommend looking at this from an active perspective. Take notes and figure out how this applies to you. So the title of the webinar was What Makes a Website Great? And we talked about multiple objectives. So these are some of the things that we think makes a web sets apart one website from another. And we'll go into more detail later, but this is at the high level. So the first thing is to have, as we alluded to a moment ago, on-brand messaging and design. So often we see people put up together a website. In fact, we've done this ourselves. We've had clients that say, yeah, branding we'll get to later. Right now we just need a website. So that can be done, and we can work with that. But if you have a brand, it's really important for those grand brand guidelines to be brought to life through your website. There's no better place to do that. So having on-brand message, on-brand design, really, really important. And that will help your website stand out from the sea of sameness. We're creating right now just got through doing a whole new logo brand identity for a software in the practice management EMR world. There's a world of sameness there. And so it was vital to go through that extra step. Brett's nodding his head. We're still catching up on his sleep after all that work we just did. But that takes a lot to make the sea of sameness to make it stand out. Great user experience and interface. Brett will be speaking about that at length in a little bit. Navigation and search bars to make sure that it's an intuitive use. Nothing makes people bounce more than can't finding what they need. I just saw a case study yesterday from an Italian company that increased its sales by a third just by improving its navigation. That was all they did, was improve their nav. So a lot of times there are leverage points on a website. When it's the bad news is when you have a bad website, is that's a problem. The good news is that oftentimes you can leverage your results pretty quickly by fixing some of these fundamental errors. Compelling content that drives users to action. So we're not just informing, we're trying to motivate. And so that's done through emotion and a lot of techniques. We'll touch on some of these today. Might be a good topic to go in deeper on a subsequent webinar. Trustworthy, does it give an instant feeling of trust? Does it have trust badges? Does it just feel trustworthy? Some websites just scream, and you can't even tell why, but the design doesn't feel very trustworthy. And so it's really easy to have a site that is not trustworthy right from the beginning, and that's a problem. Very important. We'll discuss this in a moment. SEO is built into that website. Tragic problem we'll discuss in just a moment. Mobile responsive is table stakes today. You have to have a site that works well on mobile. Most, I would say, I don't know, on average with our clients, two-thirds of to 70% of inquiries come from mobile. So oftentimes we'll think about doing the mobile design first. But in any event, it has to be mobile responsive, and you have to spend exactly the same amount of care on mobile as you do desktop, at least, maybe more. Secure. So secure with just HTTPS, but also there may be, given your business, other security measures built into it. Timely and relevant, for sure. Another thing we see, ADA and HIPAA compliant, we'll talk about again. The customized content report, including, so this means custom to you, not a bunch of things like scraped from some other website, including your messaging and including accurate medical information. We see a lot of downright plagiarism on the internet. Sometimes it's unintentional. Sometimes, someone will hire a cheap writer and they just go scrape Mayo Clinic website and put that on your site. Well, it's a real problem because you are in fact stealing copy. And in fact, Google knows and Google can penalize you for having duplicate information. So we don't want to do that. And if you want to stand out and show up in search engines, that requires customized healthcare content. Yes, I know that's more expensive, but you will need to do that if you want to stand up in the search engines. A content management system that's fast, lightweight, and responsive. Speed is really important today. This came out about maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Google started really caring about speed, particularly in mobile, because most sites were horrible. So they changed their, Google has a web page that you can test your own speeds on. It's called pagespeed.web.dev. It used to be just simply web.dev. Now it's more complicated. So pagespeed.web.dev, you can do an analysis. And what I would recommend doing is go ahead and do that analysis. If you're not getting in the 90s on your speed, talk to your web team and take a look at that more carefully. 90th percentile. Conversion paths planned by segment. That means basically, you know, if you have different target audiences, where are you trying to take them? What services are you trying to get them to buy? And what exactly does that look like? Landing pages designed for paid search. Sometimes we do standalone free landing pages. That has some advantages. And sometimes we do landing pages on a site. That's a longer discussion than I have today. But I guess the simple thing to say is the higher involved the product is, like for example, infertility, we often find that while landing pages usually work better than a landing website for conversion, on a high involvement decision, sometimes the landing page actually on the website matters. And in any event, it gives you a lot more flexibility. So building pages on that site that are specifically designed to send paid search traffic to, with things like CTAs, offers, or calls to action and others, that's really important. A lot of times a client will come to us, they just did their website, they say, great, we want to start our paid search campaign. We're like, where exactly would you like us to send traffic to? There's no place on your site that is appropriate for that. So keep that in mind. And then for those of you that are multi-location providers, some things we see that are often really big, big mistakes in terms of getting results. First of all, location providers, a separate page for every location isn't a 100% must. A separate page for every provider, even if you have 100 or 200 or 300, is a must. Making sure that you have good content for your service, for your conditions. Location and doctor finder tools for functionality, payment insurances, and some form of appointment setting, whether that's just simply inquiring by phone or form, or better when possible, actual appointment setting. So those are some of the things that matter when we're doing websites. I'm sure there's others you may think of. If you have comments, feel free to put that into the Q&A. But these are some of the things that we see time and time again are really important. And like I said, it's very common for people to bring us a website they just finished with a bunch of these things missing. And that's super disappointing, hence the reason for this meeting today. Okay, so we talked about some of the factors that make a great website. How do you get a great website? And so we're going to share the process here, which, you know, it'd be pretty boring if you don't share some insights along the way. So we'll try to share some insights along the way, but help you prepare, help you understand how to do all the things that are necessary to get that great website out of the box versus having a tragic, costly mistake afterwards. So we'll walk through that for you. So we like to divide this into phases when we talk to our clients. Phase one is the project initiation and planning, and that begins before you sign a contract. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. Site architecture is often forgotten entirely by firms who don't know better. A critical phase, if that's not done right, everything else falls apart on the back end. Phase three is the content plan and execution. So what are we going to do with content? Four is the sexy part of design, which Brett will be talking about. And development and launch is the phase five. And sometimes we call it phase five and six. By the way, everybody focuses in on that design. And while that's important, you'll notice that's number four. Sorry, Brett. So project initiation and planning. So let's start off with some fundamentals. When you're doing this, again, hope you're taking some notes, but what are your primary objectives? Why do you want a website? That's the first thing to think about. Like, really, what is it that's, what are you trying to cover? Oh, by the way, if you are doing this, these notes would be really helpful when you work with us or some other vendor to create a website. If you have notes, that you share that with them, right? That would be, it'll greatly help the process. One of the things we find that really works with clients is to ask them, so what is it you don't like about your site? And why do you even want a new one? Right? That's one of the most important questions we can ask. Some people are kind of fuzzy on that. You really need to know like what exactly we're going to do before you go down this endeavor. Is there an economic imperative to change the website? So this is an example. We have clients that spend way six figures, hundreds of thousands a month on paid search, and their website hasn't been changed for a long time. And so when we see that, we often say, hey, we're going to continue to manipulate everything we can in the machine to meaning like how we're doing the bidding and all the monitoring and tracking, all that. But oftentimes a huge lever is the website. So we can, you know, over time, let's say we improve over time the campaign to half the cost per conversion. Oftentimes we could cut it again by half again if the website was better. So many times, if you're investing substantially in marketing, it's actually costing you a lot of money to not have a perfect website. Hope that makes sense. If you're investing money to send traffic there, if your website is not up to par, it's costing you money every month. I mean, I'll just show it easily, but I promise you it is. Who are your audiences? Very important. Again, we kind of alluded to that at the very beginning. Patients, families, HCPs, employees, investors, donors, Google. Need to really figure that out. It's vital. Everything else, if you don't do this up front, everything else will be a mistake later. Who from your team will need to be involved? Websites are a political beast. If we're working with like a hospital or health system, man, a lot of people have input on that. On a smaller business, or you know, one that's more sort of top-down authoritarian, it's a little easier. But one thing I would recommend is when you decide, again, up front, figure out who needs to be involved, what's your decision-making process going to be. Formalize that before you begin. What's the functionality of the new website? We mentioned patient find or doctor finder, for example. What kinds of functionality will you need on your site? Do you have enough budget to realistically get it done right? We oftentimes find people get really confused by wild variations on website quotes. I'll walk you through that a little bit to get tell you and try to explain that a little bit more. Timeline. Another question is, how do your website compare to your competitors? It's hard. Look objectively at your competitors and see what they're doing, then you're not. What are some websites you like and don't like? Why? This is something that we ask our clients typically. It really helps us with the creative, just to get a sense of what they're looking for. Now, we do care about our clients' personal taste, but we also care a lot about the market. So we want, whoever's working with you needs to really understand that, yes, we want to satisfy the client, but we also need to satisfy users. So, and we almost always can find a solution that does both. Okay, now let's take a moment and talk about factors that will impact your estimate. And what we have found over time is that clients, when they're, and we probably have found this yourself as well, clients, when they're asking about costs for websites, often find a bewildering variety of scopes, costs, and so forth, and expectations oftentimes aren't in alignment with what is actually involved. So today I thought I would share with you some of the things to consider when you're looking at the cost of your own website as you're thinking about getting a new one developed. So the first factor that matters is the size and complexity of your website. So large websites in particular can get pretty costly. Imagine if you have 2,000 pages, just for a team member to look at them and read them and quality proof them is substantial amounts of time, which of course time equals money. So the larger the site, the more complex the website is that you're starting with, the more expensive it will likely be to create a new one. Now, of course, if your site is bloated and we're not bringing everything over, sometimes we can find ways of saving a budget by not bringing over pages that are worthless or redundant or whatever. But just keep in mind that broadly speaking, in most cases, the size of the site matters a lot. And so incidentally, this is an apple because what we're trying to do is help you make apples to apples comparisons as you're comparing quotes. And so these are some of the factors that matter because not every firm takes all these things into account or may not scope them properly. The choice of your content management system matters a lot as well, particularly if you do proprietary or open source. So open source could be, for example, WordPress, which we use a lot. We also work with other platforms depending on the situation, depending on the client. One thing about a proprietary CMS that makes things a little more difficult for you is that it just tends to be more expensive to get the proprietary software in the first place. And if you change your mind later, proprietary can be really difficult because they're closed systems. They oftentimes won't let you export. We're working with a client like that right now, where they're migrating away from proprietary CMS and they won't let the client export anything. And it's very, very difficult and expensive to do. So again, if you're at an enterprise site in a hospital system, you may need something really more complex. If you're at a mid-size or medium firm or smaller, WordPress can often work. It varies. Ask your vendor what the recommendation is and why. The next thing is, can the existing site graphics and copy be readily exported? I just mentioned that sometimes the CMS prevents it, but it really matters, can the graphics and the copy be exported? And again, it varies. We have to always check. So usually if it's WordPress, we can do it. It depends if it's a different CMS. But however, sometimes the copy isn't worth exporting, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Or the graphics, we often see this, might be really low resolution thumbnails that aren't adding any value anyway. So we may not want to export those. But again, this is just one more factor for you to consider. Any special functionality requirements, for example, patient appointment setting, or if there's doctor finders or anything that's special for functionality, will add to cost. If you're using rights managed photos or videography, or if you're doing custom photography and videos, that will obviously add cost. Rights managed means that you're using a library where you have to pay for usage, and where there's an expiration date, that adds a lot to the complexity and cost. So a lot of the Getty Images banks, for example, are rights managed. So if you're going to go that route, you can get some photos that are not used as often, but it's going to be pricey. Also, a lot of our clients prefer custom photos, custom videos, and that's great if you're willing and able to go through the expense of that. That could be excellent too. The SEO planning and execution, as we'll see shortly, a lot of times people aren't thinking about SEO at all, and that's really a problem. So that's going to impact the cost if SEO is in fact integrated into the new website build. If there's additional website pages that are required and need to be written and designed, the amount and level of amount of copy, as well as the level of expertise for the copy. So a lot of firms will either A, just tell the client to write the copy, or B, you know, get some low expense copy written overseas or use AI or something. But if you're really serious about showing up in search engines and being an authority, typically you'll want to have higher level expert writers that know what they're doing and can thread the needle between being emotional, educational, and writing appropriately for Google and search engine optimization. The experience of the people involved, similarly. So obviously, more experienced people tend to be more expensive in the world. Rush timelines can add to expense. Rounds of revisions can certainly add to expense if it goes over a certain level of revisions. If you have any special security requirements for the website, if you want to add a user testing phase, sometimes complex sites may require an investment in a discovery process just to even come up with a realistic estimate. We often see very complex sites, and sometimes we can give a reasonable estimate based upon what we can see, but if it's going to require, you know, days of time, it may require an investment just to do the due diligence. So it depends on the situation. We try not to do that, but sometimes that is the best choice. Number of pages that need to be custom designed. So are you just going to have a single secondary page design? You're going to have multiple designs. And do you need new or revised brand guidelines? So for example, we're going to be talking about a little while, a website we designed where we actually started by creating the brand guidelines, which makes the execution much better. So that, of course, would be a whole separate level of expense over and above the website, should that be the direction you need to go. So now that you understand that there's a lot of factors that influence the price, the next thing is to figure out who's going to do it for you. Obviously, we feel partial to our own agencies. So without being too self-promotional here, I can just tell you objectively, many times you may need to get quotes. If you do, I would just recommend getting, you know, competent firms to give you quotes. That means that they've got people that specialize in these various areas like strategy, the account management, SEO, content, design, senior developers, project management. I would recommend, there's no reason not to look for people with healthcare marketing experience. They understand how to motivate people to action. Very different than just creating a website. Do you like the people you're working with? Do they have the track record and capabilities? And of course, does the budget make sense for both sides? So those are some things to think about. If you're interested, we have an ebook on this topic, How to Choose an Agency, that goes into depth pretty objectively. So feel free to request that from us. So we're getting closer to, you know, making a decision on who we're going to hire. How do we ensure success? Well, the first thing is to, again, to carefully define your objectives, priorities, and desired functionality. That's the first step. Second step is to build internal alignment around your objectives. Make sure that you're all on the same page. Define a realistic budget. Solicit bids from a shortlist, not a cattle call. And that's really important. I know it may feel like it makes a lot of sense to ask 20 different agencies for quotes. Not only is that wasting your time, but you may find, especially busier agencies may just pass. That actually happened to me just today. I wrote an email back to someone who had asked us to bid. They were looking for all kinds of spec work. There was this huge RFP and they were talking to dozens of agencies and we're busy, we're successful. So we just politely passed. So you can overdo that. Certainly understand the need to solicit bids, but I would keep it reasonable to save your time and not waste other people's time as well. Identify the internal resources that will be involved, the internal people, as well as assets, you know, employee time, logins, contracts, pull that all together. That can be hard sometimes. Confirm the scope, timing, and pricing with your agency. Make sure you're on the same page and you all understand what you're getting. Upon commencement, I would highly recommend that you fully cooperate in the onboarding and process steps, and also consolidate feedback at each step and give the agent, so that provide that to the agency and give them clear direction. Working together in this project is a team sport. And it's, imagine just sort of throwing the ball back and forth to each other. I throw you the ball, you throw it back to me, I throw you the ball. It's gonna be a lot more fun game of catch, and you're gonna be done a lot faster if we're all working together. So, you know, clients often tell us they look at our agency as a member of their team. We certainly look at our clients as a member of our team to work together to accomplish the goal of a fantastic website. This is a real-world project timeline that we're creating. We just created, actually, for a complex site we're working with. You'll see this particular one started in March and is going through August. About half the time period there is development. This one has a couple thousand pages, lots of peculiarities that require heavy-duty navigation time and creativity. Most of the sites we create, if they're custom, are probably, you know, 90 days to 120 days. At larger sites can take longer, and obviously simpler sites may take less time. Site architecture. So this next phase that we're going to talk about is the site architecture, and this is often overlooked by people, tragically. So the site architecture means, I'll flip through a couple here. The site architecture is really all about, from our point of view, both SEO and usability. So the site architecture essentially is the foundational blueprint for your website. Like I said, it determines both SEO and usability. But the SEO team needs to be involved at this very, very early stage because it impacts everything. So they should be making recommendations about your sitemap, your URL structure, your URL directs, redirects, your tags, your content, other vital elements. And upon approval of that, your SEO team should create both an SEO and content plan for your new website. The reason there is a convertible on this page is not a coincidence. The reason is because I've seen over and over again clients who unfortunately were never told otherwise will go ahead and pay someone to create a website, and they call us and say, great, let's go ahead and do SEO now. And our response is, oh no, because it really should have been built into the new site. And so just like if you decide you want to buy a website and SEO matters to you, you should build that into it. It's much more efficient. Just like if you want a convertible, it's a whole lot smarter to buy a convertible than to buy a sedan and pay someone to saw the roof off and try to reconstruct a convertible. It just doesn't make sense. And there's all kinds of problems that come with not thinking about SEO up front. And I'll talk about that more in a little while. So we've done the planning, we've got our architecture. Now it's time to think about our content plan and execution. So, you know, more specifically about the content audit, we oftentimes will, our content team will give very specific details about, okay, taking the information architecture to more precisely, which pages are we going to carry over? Which ones do we recommend that you kill or redirect? Which missing pages do you have compared to your competitors? Where are the big SEO opportunities? And which pages would benefit from a refresh? This is all pre-launch. And oftentimes the content plan may include things we'll do after launch, right? If we have to do a lot of content, sometimes the pressure to get live is big. So we'll create the website, get it up, and create, already be planning the next generation of copy. One thing that I would say that, with due respect to my colleague Brett on the other side here, that while design is essential and everybody can see it, copy is equally essential. So while everybody can think about whether a website is pretty, very few people give enough credence to the power of copy. And just remember that copy motivates people to action. It's essential for high-ranking SEO. It advances your brand messaging. It's got to be accurate and clinically correct. And again, it typically requires someone who knows SEO, emotional, motivating copy, and factual. So copy is a vital part. And oftentimes, going back to what we were saying earlier, when you have apples to oranges quotes, you know, if a web designer says, well, you just write your copy, you can, you'll save some money. That really is not optimal. It's better to have an expert who really knows what they're doing so they can write for Google, write for humans, write for your referring doctors or whatever. Okay, so when we get to the stage also, we spend a lot of time thinking about brand guidelines and messaging quality to make sure we're consistent with the brand that we're writing for. We also will make sure we audit all the high priority pages to make sure they meet both those brand and SEO standards. Make sure you don't migrate bad content over or bring on technical debt. In other words, sometimes people will bring over a website, they unknowingly bring over bad code, which means that a problem that's been existing for years continues on into the future indefinitely. So we don't want to do that. We want to clean all that up before. If we're going to do a website, let's do it right. And again, we're thinking about all the things that matter with copy, like the target audiences, accuracy, credibility, readability, you know, grammar, format, all these things. Incidentally, we have a new webinar coming up in a few weeks about content marketing that'll go into much more detail about this topic. So you're welcome to attend that. Stay tuned, that'll be available. Or if you're watching the recording, this may already be on the site. We have a content marketing webinar that is a sister to this particular meeting. Okay, next section is design. Brett, take it away.
I think it's important to note that when I speak about design of a website, I'm not speaking about just me, the creative director, and my team who does the design. A lot more people are involved in design. That goes from project management to account managers. In our case, we're lucky to have a lot of experts that can help along the way. Our SEO teams are fabulous. All of those things inform that phase four when we take over. Stuart referred to it as sexy. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. We like to think it is, but it's definitely always informed design. It's not a designer saying, hey, this looks cool, let's do this. It needs to respond to specific demographics, target audiences, you know, conversions is always the most important. So we're going to start right here. This is kind of what I was just talking about. Design is not a monolith. And by that, I mean, we don't stand alone. Design doesn't just happen. It's informed by a lot of teams. It's informed by SEO work. It's informed by project management, sitemaps, client input and needs. That all happens before we ever touch any design. No matter how good we make a website design look, it's not going to matter if all of those things are not in place, right? If we're just designing off the cuff, it's going to be cool looking, but it's probably not going to function. It's probably not going to achieve what you're hoping it achieves. So here you just see a quick list. Client inputs and needs. What are you looking for? What's your goal? Are we looking for more conversions? The answer is yes. You're always looking for that. You know, like Stuart has started talking about auditing your existing website. What pages are necessary? What pages are useless? How can we really clarify what needs to be on this site and what is excessive? Sitemap's always important. Again, that's which pages are going to be there. What are your secondary pages? What are your primary pages? What pages give you more detail if the user wants that? A lot of times they don't, but in healthcare, it's always great to have that as well. Wireframes. This is a quick visual of wireframes you're looking at now. This isn't a design. In our firm, again, we have a lot of people who have been doing this for years. Everyone from our SEO team through project management, through account management is more than capable of understanding how to put together a wireframe that helps us achieve a really clear design that gets the most important content to your user as soon as possible. Of course, then, you know, we make sure the client is aligned on that and we develop a client brief, which then informs what we do in design. UI and UX. This term gets thrown around a lot, and I think there's some confusion on it depending on your level of familiarity with design and with websites. It's not a single thing. They're two very different things. And a lot of big product software teams have UI designers and UX designers working in tandem. It's really important to understand the difference. The user interface is more about how your site looks. How do your call to actions look? How do your buttons look? How are photos treated? How do people understand what they're seeing? The user experience, which is much more important, especially when you're talking about brand, how that translates through your communication, and how you have someone convert into contacting you. The user interface is visual. The user experience is how easy is it to get from point A, the introduction to your site, to point B or Z, however many steps you have along the way, ideally it's not many, to contacting, to making an appointment, to engaging with your site or your company in the way you want it to. User experience is really important. It conveys what type of company you are, how clear you're approaching your deliverable, and how easily accessible your offerings are to potential patients, potential users, all that jazz. This is a quick chart. I think this is a really nice, useful way to understand the differences, the principles of your user interface. It should be intuitive. There shouldn't be that many surprises. People should understand that if they click a contact us button, they're contacting you. If there's a form and they fill it out, it's being sent. If there's a read more button, they understand that that's going to give them more information on the topic they're looking at. Consistency and clarity are vital to user interface. Designers are ambitious. I'll talk about that in a minute. We like to create new things, but intuitiveness is really important. And there are a lot of learned behaviors. We've all had 20, 30 years of understanding websites at this point. So that becomes very important. Again, user experience is a much longer list. It's a much more subjective list. But again, it's making sure the client can digest your information easily. It's making sure that they understand once they find that information they're looking for, they can act on it. They can contact you. They can learn more. Context is everything. Usability is first. User experience includes understanding how to navigate through your site. Do you have clear breadcrumbs where they can get back a page if they need to? The simplest thing, to the more complex things like ADA compliance that makes sure that your website is easily viewable by people who may be vision impaired, high contrast. Design takes a backseat to accessibility on websites. It needs to. It's a good practice. So that's a whole webinar in itself, UI versus UX, but we're going to move on to the basics of what make websites great. All these things apply to what I just went through. And this is one of the most important things I've learned through years of product design and website design. You don't need to reinvent the wheel to have a successful website. Again, designers are ambitious things. We love to explore. We love to create novel solutions. But we do have 20 to 30 years of website design to look back on, to rely on, to reference. There are best practices that have been proven to convert better. You don't need to recreate how a navigation works if a navigation works. A lot of our users have learned experiences. They understand that if they roll over a navigation and it drops down, you're going to get more options. They understand that if they click a learn more button, there's going to be more information there. So I think a lot of times designers make a mistake of trying to be too novel rather than relying on best practices. And we see that a lot, and we pull back a lot of novel, cool solutions many times when we're redesigning a site because it's not as effective as what we all have learned through the years and we all understand to work. There are common languages throughout site design. There are a lot of different types of users. This is a quick little list we've put together, but again, your site needs to be intuitive and flexible to accommodate different types of users. You have people like the avid searcher who will, as soon as they get to your site, they'll look for the search bar. They'll search what they want, they'll find that content. You have people that just scroll down the page and look at the titles and see what's relevant to them. And you have people that go through a website based on traditional navigation and clicking as they see things that are relevant. And of course, you have the users who may have more difficulty seeing or understanding a site. And that's when ADA compliance really comes in handy. In an ideal, great website, which we're talking about today, your website should be able to accommodate all of these people. If you have an avid searcher, you have a search bar up top. If you have a scroller, as you scroll down the page, these section headlines read like a clear narrative. It's not disjointed. Everything's connected and it tells a story. That goes from the homepage to the About Us page to a very deep site page that has details. There's no reason you can't accommodate for every type of user as you design. This slide, I always debate on even including it. Responsive design. It's an automatic. That is kind of a play on words, right? And I say I debate on whether or not to include it because at this point, it is an industry standard. Your site needs to operate and look great and read well and be digestible. Sure, on desktop, but as you see from the stat at the bottom of the slide, almost 60% of people are only interacting with your websites based on the mobile. That's an ever-growing number. It's very important. I saw a Q&A that came up earlier asking if a majority of your users are still interacting by desktop. Is that due to a lack of good mobile design, or is that indicative of your demographic? I would say it could be either. Your demographic definitely matters, right? I mean, if your main demographic, your target audience, is much older, you may be seeing an uptick in desktop views. More and more, as a designer, I love desktop and how it looks, but I look at a lot of websites on my phone and very seldom do I see them on desktop. So I think the best answer to that is, why not have both your desktop and your mobile solutions look perfect, be well thought out, and function well? The answer here, based on responsive, is always a nice balance. You always accommodate both. I think the answer to responsive design is necessary now. This is not an option anymore. You can't rely on desktop design that looks good that fails on mobile. It impacts how you write your content. It impacts how you chunk up your content as well. It needs to be digestible on mobile. It needs to function well on mobile. It's just not an option anymore. Which makes my job a lot more fun, of course. The importance of hierarchy. This is a really traditional design principle, definitely when you're dealing with typography, but this applies to all of your content down your webpage, especially your homepage, throughout your website. You need to understand how people digest information. This is a really helpful graphic on the left specific to typography. Hierarchy matters. What are people reading first? What are they reading second? And what is tertiary? So as you think through how you build your site, as you think through how you lay out your content, you need to understand what people are seeing first. What thing is taking the primary focus in each section of your website or each page of your website? This is very relevant with typography when you're dealing with SEO. This is super relevant when you're talking about user experience, how people navigate a site. If something's very important, should it be in a carousel? Should you have very fast carousels with a lot of information? Maybe not if it's that important. And you need to make these decisions along the way. And again, this is a time where best practices that we've learned through the years come in handy. I just mentioned this, understanding that there is a short attention span on websites. You need to have your content laid out and interpreted in a very digestible way. You can't have typography spanning the full width of the page. That's not how the eye works for most people. They can't read across that long thing or they'll lose interest. You don't want to have huge sections of content, especially on a homepage. Here you see one of our recent cardiovascular clients. You'll see we have a lot of the core content. We, you know, above the fold is a thing that comes and goes depending on who you're talking to, but the very important things are at the top of the page. That will always be relevant. That will always be important. Can they contact you? Yes. Can they navigate your site? Yes. Do they get the idea of what your offering is? Absolutely. In this case, we have quick links below the hero banner. But when you see why choose us, that big blue dark section, that could easily be a very copy heavy situation. That could be an unappealing content section. But we've learned through best practices that you need to tease them into the content. Let them understand what they want to see. If they want to click that, they click it. They learn more information. On the right, you see a secondary page. Again, you're making the content more digestible. You're making the user able to find what they're looking for quicker and a more efficient way. It's very important. It's very important, especially when you get away from your homepage and your secondary pages. Your detail pages, you see just huge blocks of copy. And even if you maintain an all copy page, you need to apply typographic principles that lets that copy be digestible. Clear sectioning, clear heading. Again, that hierarchy that just lets the person understand exactly what they're reading and look for the information they need. Content variety is a way to maintain visual interest. I would love to say that this is very much about only designers, but it's not. This involves a lot of work on the client side and on our side. More and more, our websites can be easily multimedia. Should everything be a photo with a block of copy? Should you have a big quote for your testimonials? I don't know. Testimonials are pretty valuable. They go back to what Stuart was talking about earlier, that accreditation. You want to be able to relate to people. You want to understand how they've experienced your offering. They don't always have to be typed. In this case, another one of our clients, Synergenics, a testosterone replacement and hormone therapy company, which we've worked with a lot. This was a new website design that we did for them. And we started mixing in more multimedia. As you see, the patient stories, it's not just a testimonial quote. It's a video of one of their patients saying what changes they made in his lifestyle, what changes the therapy helped him to accomplish. Seeing someone talking about something, someone you can relate to, someone who's gone through this, a really nice way to mix up your content. Can you have quotes from clients? Absolutely. Does it keep the user scrolling down your page if you have a mixture of quotes, a mixture of photos, videos, icons? Special video treatments, it does. And on your homepage, it can make a big difference. So there's just not that much reason anymore not to keep the page engaging, even if after you get past this very important top of page element. Relatable design, this is really important. This goes to ADA compliance. Can the people see your site? Can they understand, can they understand your site? But more importantly, what we're talking about here is understanding your audience, understanding your target demographics. No matter how pretty your site is, if you're speaking to the wrong people with your design, you're gonna lose users. They're gonna check out. If, for instance, your audience, your offering is male specific, prostate, for instance, I don't think you want to show a lot of women. It's just not relatable. What is your demographic? What area are you serving? Is it lower income? Is it higher income? Are you catering to Medicaid or premium insurances? let the user know that right away so that they can understand or relate better. Expertise is very important. You know, if we have a client now, if you're trying to design a site for ophthalmologists and all of your images are optometrists, you're going to have a really quick disconnect there. You're going to have a checkout. People won't view you as an authority. If healthcare is dangerous in this regard, if you don't understand the procedures, especially when you're showing them or speaking to them, you lose a lot of credibility and people will find someone who they trust more or that understands your industry, your vertical better. And then at the end of the day, I love interactive. I love website work, but brand always matters to me. I'm a brander at heart. I think we all like to think that we are. And the beautiful thing about websites is it is your, Stuart mentioned it earlier, it's the front door of your brand. You know, a lot of times when we're working with clients, especially on brand, when we think about social media and advertising on social media, we're trying to stand out. We're trying to differentiate on those very crowded fields. When you have a user on your website, you have a contained audience. You have an opportunity to establish your own brand environment, communicate your mission, your values, your purpose, really differentiate yourself and let that customer know that you are special, you are unique, and they are in your world right now. This is a great website we just finished. We also did the branding for this company. It's a blood plasma donation thing. Sorry, I practice, if you will. But here you see we're exercising all the same principles we do for a less specific looking site. But in this case, we're really letting that website scream its brand. What's its target demographic? College kids who maybe could use some money for donations. You know, what is the feeling of this company? It's optimistic, it's positive. You're making a change in society by giving your blood. Really establishing, again, the brand environment. There's no reason your website cannot promote your brand while also being very effective in terms of how people interact with it and how they see you, your company, and how expert how expert you are in your field. So I always suggest that you find a really happy balance between pure functionality, what works, what doesn't, best practices, and there's absolutely no reason you can't have a very unique website that speaks to your brand, your mission, and also have a great website that deals with healthcare. It doesn't always have to be bland. It doesn't always have to be careful and boring, but it does need to be functional.
Thank you, Brett. That was great. So now let's talk about development and launch. So there's a whole bunch of work that goes on behind the scenes with development, and I'm not going to try to explain all these individual steps to you, which I'm sure would bore you and maybe even bore me. So there's a lot of details that happen behind the scenes. About half the work typically is happening at this stage. It varies, of course, by the project, but this is where a lot of the real work happens. When we're working with clients, typically we'll put together a dev site that they'll see maybe 2 to 4 weeks before launch. But until we get from that last phase to this phase, there's a whole bunch of work that happens behind the scenes. Couple bonus tips. Today, as you may or may not know, there's been some recent changes with the Office of Civil Rights. The FTC's gotten involved in class action lawsuits around privacy, specifically related to digital tracking technologies. We've had webinars on this. We also just created an ebook. If you're interested in this topic, please check our site. We have lots of resources available on our website. This is a vital issue. Please take it seriously to make sure that you're doing the right steps to make sure your site is compliant and you're not inadvertently doing things that are out of compliance. So for example, surprisingly, as of this moment, the Google Analytics is not allowed. Everybody uses Google Analytics. The entire industry does. But Google Analytics is an example of a digital tracking technology. And the Office of Civil Rights has come out multiple times against digital tracking technologies. So again, there's much more detail available on our website about this, and you can check that out. Similarly, there is also a whole bunch of lawsuits that have been filed over the years over ADA compliance and websites. This particular slide talks about UserWay, which is a vendor we often recommend as an insurance policy. They have a tool that makes any website user-friendly from an ADA standpoint. And so again, we have information on our website about this. Feel free to read the blog post on this. And if you have questions, you're going to ask us. But both HIPAA and ADA compliance are essential, and make sure that you are thinking about this as part of your website launch. Okay, some common mistakes to avoid. So I feel like people seem to learn from mistakes more than the positive stuff. And certainly we've seen our share of mistakes. So one of the big mistakes we hear all the time, and this one is among the most regrettable, people will call us up and say, "Stuart, we finally finished our website. Now we can finally begin marketing." And again, my answer is like, "No, why did you do that?" Because as the epicenter of your marketing, it's really important to be thinking about marketing your website before you begin. So if you've made that mistake, we understand, we can still work with you, but it really, this is an integral part of your marketing. It's much more ideal to plan your marketing around the website and build the website from day one with marketing in mind. Number two, this is incredibly common. We see clients come to us after they had a new website done. Their website nosedove from traffic. It went from, you know, high to nothing overnight, and now they're panicking, as they probably should. It's really bad. We have a client we're working with from New Zealand that had literally that happen last year. The firm they were working with is more of a tech firm. They didn't understand SEO. They relaunched, their years and years of international SEO dropped through the floor. We were able to get most, they called us, we brought our SWAT team on it. We were able to get most of that traffic back, but that's high risk. And it certainly isn't ideal. It's a very high risk maneuver. Do not do it. Make sure SEO is integrated into your new website. Mistakes, you know, can be very costly, and there's no guarantees, and you may not get all that traffic back. So be careful. Underestimating the value of content. Like I said, many people say, "I'll just have the website designer design the content. I'll use a template and I'll write it." And you really are short, selling yourself short if you do that, especially if marketing is going to be at all an issue of importance for your business. Duplicate content. Clients sometimes unknowingly or even knowingly take content from other websites. Google looks at it as plagiarism. That's not good for your search engine rankings. So whether or not that's a ranking factor is up for debate, but there's also laws around this. So please don't plagiarize or just strip content from other websites. That is a real problem SEO-wise and potentially legally. Delegating websites to IT. Hopefully by now I've convinced you this is not an IT job. This is a larger, multifaceted team sport. So just simply delegating a website to IT is a high-risk endeavor. Looking at your website only as an expense, of course, it can be a revenue generator for you. Not understanding the clearly defined scope of work, or you know, hiring, you know, sort of unqualified, cheapest vendors you can find, can be a real issue, especially if you're in a competitive industry where you care. So I would suggest that if you're interested in this topic and you have questions, reach out to us. If you are interested in our services, I invite you to give us a call. We're happy to do an exploratory call with you. And if appropriate, we can even give you a website critique on what's working, what's not working with your site from a creative standpoint, as well as from an SEO standpoint. And from that point, if it's appropriate, we're happy to provide an estimate as well. So I invite you to reach out to us. Also, if you have any other questions, we're available to talk to you. And I want to say thank you very much for attending our webinar. We appreciate your time. We hope you got a lot of value out of this. Thanks so much.